Hello, I'm James Sandy, and this is the New Curiosities Box, a worthy fragment of arts and culture from Birmingham and beyond. In this show, we revisit the relevance of a modern theatre classic with cast and director of Blue Orange at the Rep. We consider how to demystify the misunderstood by way of one-woman performance piece The Blood Tales as it gears up for its UK premiere. And there's a launch of a new collection of contemporary plays by African women at Coventry's Belgrade Theatre. For an archive of all our shows to date, links and information about featured artists and details on how to get in touch, visit us at www.switchradio.co.uk/James Sandy. We start with Joe Pennell's 2000 play, Blue Orange, as it's reawakened with increased cutting relevance by way of a new production at the Rep Birmingham. I caught up with director Daniel Bailey and key cast member Ivan Oyuk as they readied for the performance of this darkly comic conscience piece about mental health, prejudice and power play. Okay, I'm here with Daniel and Ivan, who are kind of, I suppose, protagonists, let's call you that, in Blue Orange, the Joe panel show here at the Rep. And Dan, you're the director of the play, which is, you know, all pressure on you, I think.
All pressure.
And Ivan, as if pressure isn't enough, this is your kind of debut in some ways, your stage debut as an actor. So let's start with talking a little bit about Blue Orange, because I think it's a play that most people will know of. They might not know completely in depth, but they would have heard about it, because in some ways it's quite a controversial piece, and it's nearly, I think, 20 years since it first came out.
Yeah, I mean, nearly the same age as Ivan sitting across the table from me.
Just about.
It was written, I think Joe started writing it in 1998, and so it took about a couple of years to finally get written and workshopped and then put on stage. So yeah, it's, it had its debut in 2000. Had his West End debut in 2001, I think. So yeah, just under 20 years.
And it's kind of, I suppose, cast as a dark comedy. You know, there's a satire about it. It's kind of a mix of themes, but there is a humour, isn't there? There's a very human part that comes from it as well.
Absolutely. I think Joe's been really clever about how he's presented the play as a dark comedy. Because in this day and age, we take those things quite literal. So a dark comedy with a dark man, right? it's a dark comedy, and a really brilliant comedian said to me, if they're laughing, they're listening. So actually, comedy is the driver of a lot of change. I believe comedy is the way to get everybody on board and listening, really. So, yeah.
So there are two, I think, sort of central... There's probably more. There's two central dynamics, really, I guess, to the play. One is a sort of study about mental health and how mental health is perceived and treated or supported.
Yeah.
And then there's also another dynamic around, I suppose, racism and sort of prejudice from a kind of institutional point of view. Mm-hmm. Now, those, I guess, you know, those are big, controversial, heavy themes, aren't
massive,
they? You know,
massive.
Particularly difficult, I think, to tackle from a kind of comedic point of view. But I guess people's views of those things have changed over that last 20 years as well. So
you think that?
Yeah, okay. Definitely think so.
you would think that, but yeah. I guess through the research and through us looking at things that happened almost 20 years ago and looking at things that are happening now, not much has changed. Actually, I think Joe makes a really important point about semantics. So this play is very much about the language and who uses the language and what the language means. And actually what we've seen over the last 20 years is what's changed is the language. So, you know, particular things like BPD, borderline personality disorder, has a new name. I mean, the symptoms are exactly the same thing. It just has a new name, that's all. Yeah, language is a massive, massive component to this play. But racism obviously runs through it. It's the British idea of racism, you know, quite insidious, systematic, but not overt, usually. So, racism is one of the many layers that this play kind of keeps. You know, it's rich in that sense. It just keeps uncovering layers and layers and layers.
So, do you think? I mean, I guess there's more of a. Hopefully, there's more of an understanding of some of you know, the mental health agenda. And hopefully, I think there's some there's a perhaps better understanding of race and identity and ethnicity. But I guess some of it is, it's all very well that people understanding it, but it's articulating it and applying it. Is that perhaps where you're getting to in terms of, you know, in terms of that language and that shift? It hasn't shifted in terms of behaviour completely. It's just sort of, you know, perhaps some things have been a bit more readily accepted.
A bit more articulated, a bit you know, clearer. I mean, I remember being in school 20 years ago. No one ever talked about mental health. It was never a thing. It was a taboo, actually, and it still is. I mean, especially in the black community, it's very much a taboo. It's very much linked to sometimes spirituality or whatever else, you know, whatever notion gets thrown in there. But now it's a thing that people are quite openly talking about. It's something that is, you know, almost like an instant packet of noodles. You can just pick up the phone and readily have a conversation, or readily have something on your phone that just allows you to access things. You know, we didn't have that instant. You know, you'd have to go through three or four different channels before you got to the right person. Now you can just instantly have that connection with someone or a professional. So, yeah, I mean, things have definitely changed in that respect. In regards to how we treat it, not much has changed, unfortunately.
I think also a clever exploration in the play of, and you touched on it in your in what you just said, about, I suppose, people's relationship with the state, and particularly the British state, you know, and the kind of our ideals of what it is and what actually it is or what it's become. And there are some, I think, some really pertinent things to consider now. You know, we're kind of at a phase where, you know, Brexit is fast kind of approaching us. We've had the whole Windrush debate, let's call it that for argument's sake. So it's really, you know, those kind of issues, I think, those topics help underline some of the themes, don't they, I think, in the work that you're putting forward.
And that's why it becomes so relevant now. You know, 20 years on, we're sitting here and I'd seen it in the archives, actually, a few years ago, and then I saw it again at a London venue called the Young Vic, only about 2-3 years ago. And now suddenly, maybe it's because I'm doing it, maybe because I'm doing it here in Birmingham, more specifically, but it just feels incredibly relevant to the state in which we find ourselves now, because of Brexit, you know, because of the whole Windrush debacle, because of how, you know, we're treating young black men in our society, because, you know, because of the prejudice that exists, you know, amongst the police and amongst all of these different institutional kind of organisations. So yeah, it just all of a sudden becomes relevant and more poignant and more pointed and more it just feels like it's needed right now, specifically here in Birmingham. We're trying to tackle these things. There's some brilliant people out there. Beresford, who works for NHS. Birmingham Sally Hall Mental Health Trust, sorry, just to plug. he works specifically in a community, and that community really is a black community, and it's, you know, young black men, older black men dealing with mental health issues. So yeah, it just becomes relevant the more you do it and the more you think about it. It just becomes part of the ether and the zeitgeist, I guess.
Ivan, let's come to you as one of the actors. I think that's how it's pronounced. You, as we mentioned right at the start, this is a kind of stage debut for yourself. You recently graduated from the Guildford School of Arts, I think.
To be fair, I'm still there.
Are you still there now?
I'm in my final year, yeah.
You won't find out, don't worry.
It's kind of snuck away, yeah.
This is quite, I guess, an exciting moment for you, but quite a challenge as well, isn't it? We were laughing about pressure to start, but this is a real sort of time for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's still quite surreal, to be fair, you know. I come in every day to rehearsal, and it's just like, you know, this is my job. You know, this is what I've been training to do. You know, I've been so used to, for the past 2 and a bit years, you know, going into drama school, you know, rehearsing, so on and so forth. But now, it's, you know, the atmosphere and the environment's no longer in drama school. It's an actual production, actual play. And yeah, the pressure, I think, with the help of Daniel and my fellow actors, I feel like the pressure's, you know, been alleviated, you know. They've helped me a lot with the environment that I'm in currently. And yeah, I'm not one, like, I feel pressure, but I let it go quickly, you know. Once the stakes are there, but it's like, all right, got a job to do. Let's get cracking.
And as Daniel mentioned, there have been a number of productions of the play, a number of versions, if you like, mm-hmm. in terms of how people have interpreted it. Have you yourself sort of bought things that you think, well, I must at least pay heed to these things? Or have you thought, these are things I don't want to do, or I absolutely want to kind of cast out?
I think it's one of those things where you can always take a bit of inspiration from, you know, each production. Because I know Daniel Kaluuya did one a few years ago at the Young Vic. I know Jitewo did the first one that was done when it first came out. Like, I've read interviews that they've done and heard, like, seen interviews and so on and so forth. And you can always take bits and pieces, but you always want to make sure that, you know, your own interpretation is as true to the specific time that you're doing it, you know. So when Daniel did it, how those years back, is going to be completely different from how I do it, you know. And of course, I can take as much inspiration from that, but it's always going to be my own interpretation and what I feel is true and what the character deserves for the moment in time that it's being played.
Daniel, as director, I mean, you've got all kinds of challenges in terms of, you know, keeping everybody in order, but you've got a fairly, I think you've got a fairly small cast, if you like. And you mentioned, you know, there's lots of things going on at the moment which help to give it relevance and perhaps, you know, increase the sort of potency of some of the messages. How difficult is it to kind of translate those with a small cast and, you know, kind of on a blank canvas, as it were?
Well, actually, the cast have been quite receptive to it. They know what we're doing here. They understand what's going on here in Birmingham, in the West Midlands, to be more specific. And really, it's been a challenge, but it's been a great challenge that's been met with open arms, and everybody kind of understands what we're trying to do and what we want to do. So that also informs the vision, and it becomes a collective thing that everybody kind of gets on board with. So it's been, it's been a challenge, but it's been a great challenge, and the challenge has been met quite positively. So.
Now, one thing I was going to ask you about is, and it links back to the title, to the blue orange. Mm. Okay, so not wanting to give too much away, but there is a particular citrus fruit that a lead character sort of swears is blue. You know, that's the kind of a trigger, isn't it? It's a kind of it's a pointer for the. For the story, but there's also something about Idi Amin. Do you want to explain that? And I think Idi Amin is a character that's often, you know, we tend to look at him fondly. I don't know why we do, but he's an important kind of reference, isn't he?
Probably because of the last king of Scotland. I wouldn't be surprised that I mean, that's the only real. There's not a lot of documentation about Idi Amin, and the one thing everybody goes to is the last king of Scotland and how he first welcomed, you know, a Scotsman into his homeland. So yeah, Idi Amin is definitely a massive figure within the play, and actually, a lot of the story kind of is underpinned by that belief that our character is related to Idi Amin. And so yeah, we kind of hold on to that as one of the many things that Chris presents to us. But it just seems like because of the facts that are presented within the play, it feels quite easy for us to hold on to it. And I mean, there's a brilliant twist in it that I won't reveal now, but you kind of feel that a lot of it hangs on this one, this kind of one revelation of that Christopher kind of presents. And just incredible writing, though, for you to be able to do that.
There is, I think, a use of him as a kind of a playful character in the sense that, you know, he is a dictator, and he represents dictators and bad government, if you like. But he also, I think, represents something really important, which is this idea of these are your problems, these are your community's problems.
Yeah.
You know, this is a black man's problem. It's not a universal, international problem. And perhaps, I guess, because he hasn't become a comedy character, I don't think ever we could describe him like that, but he has become more acceptable, hasn't he, as a kind of...
Because of comedy. Comedy does that. Mm-hmm. Comedy allows you to do that. You know, the minute you... If you put a dictator and you talk about them slaughtering 1,000 people, they become a horror figure. But if you talk about Idi Amin playing the accordion, suddenly it become human. Suddenly all the decisions were made based on a fact, or, you know, based on a logic of some sort, or some sort of idea that would have been accepted at one point. So I think Joe's done an incredible job at kind of presenting Idi Amin as this human figure who, you know, there's a moment in the play where Christopher talks about him loving oranges, which is a very human thing to do. You know, someone who enjoys their oranges. You know, I enjoy pineapples. I'm not, you know. So Yeah, I think Joe's done a really incredible job at making us feel that he's a figure that can be loved and hated, but you know, also comedy can come out of those kind of horrific figures that we once saw. But I think that's very much playing on the consciousness of our kind of British society. It's easy for us to condemn people when we don't know who the hell they are. It's easy for us to put them up and assume that they were, that everybody, you know, that everybody was a dreadful dictator, a devil. When actually we don't know the ins and outs. We don't know what the journey was and, you know, and what happened day to day sometimes. But comedy does that brilliantly. It allows us to kind of see the human in people.
Ivan and Daniel, it's been great to have a quick chat with you. And
thank you,
no
so
problem. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
You're listening to the New Curiosities Box with me, James Sandy, on 107.5 Switch Radio. Experimental and empowering performance now by way of one-woman performance piece, The Blood Tales. Provocative and witty, The Blood Tales explores the culture and landscape of women's blood, addressing the taboos and outdated views on the menstrual cycle. Conceived, written and performed by Birmingham-born Kate Joyner, it launches at a UK premiere in London on International Women's Day, Friday, the 8th of March, 2019. I tracked Kate down for an insight on this fascinating and refreshing performance piece. On the line now, I'm very pleased to welcome Kate Joyner, who's going to talk to me all the way from sunny Barcelona about The Blood Tales, which is a performance piece which Kate is the writer and, I guess, key performer in. Kate, let's start with the kind of premise or the focus.
A show that seeks a different narrative of women's blood, a different kind of story that really brings out the true essence and the true magic of what women's blood actually is, telling the true tale of blood.
So we're talking here about, I suppose, some of the perceptions, some of the misunderstandings, some of the sort of taboos and stereotypes that are attached to the menstrual cycle. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, and specifically the period of blood time. So, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding around this time. And so the show really brings, kind of blasts out the water all of the old perceptions and all of it says, you know, there's something else that we're not seeing here.
And this is a one-woman show. So this is yourself leading and, I guess, acting out, exploring different parts of the piece. And is there an element of a sort of dark comedy to it? Is it done in a sort of, not in a frivolous way, but is it done in a sort of satirical way?
The main character is a witch, that's how I like to describe her. She has this freedom of expression that comes with being the witty witch, and so she kind of says things, there's quite a lot of humour to it. So yeah, it definitely has a quick to it for sure.
And just reading around the piece just before talking to you, there are a couple of things that struck me. One was, I guess, trying to achieve, I suppose, an openness or a kind of better dialogue around some of these themes, but also, I guess, trying to pick up on, I think, what have been described as perhaps some of the kind of unspoken voices. So is that something that you've sort of consciously worked in, or is that something that's developed throughout the performance?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been working with The Blood Tales for 4 years now, so it's gone through different phases of investigation. And you know, one of my, as an artist, and also the work that I do outside of the theatre, one of my tasks, I guess, is to bring the unspoken voices of the feminine to the forefront. So a lot of, you know, feminine expression that doesn't get a voice, doesn't get said, doesn't get seen. And I think we're in a time now where it's wanting to be spoken, to be brought into expression. And there's a more of a liberty and a freedom that women and men and children and everybody, whole of humanity, are kind of wanting to open up, I guess. I mean, that's my sense.
One thing I was going to ask you is, so you started in sort of 2015, so I guess nearly 4 years ago, and you've performed the piece, I think, across America and across various bits of Europe. And I was keen to know how different audiences had received the work, but also how perhaps they've helped change it.
No, that's a good question. Well, it's been very well received. You know, it's obviously the show that appeals mainly to women than it does to men, but we do get men coming to the shows, and they're, you know, one favourite bit of feedback was from a man that came at the end of my shift and said, seeing your show makes me really wish I could menstruate. And, you know, it's kind of like I'd achieved my mission having that feedback come from this beloved man. Yeah, it's been very well received. And, I mean, it started out in my performance. I started out as a poet, a spoken word poet, and in the process transferred to a full-scale to production. I would say then the audience shaping the piece, I think the piece is shaped in, it stretched me way beyond my comfort zone and taking me to immerse myself in a really experimental laboratory here that where I've been immersed for the last. So it has a life of its own, very mysterious, and it's definitely shaped me, and I think it shapes, and the way, obviously, yeah, the way it's been received, it shaped my love and my continuer for giving it, you know.
And was that quite a natural transition from the sort of spoken word piece to a more sort of theatrical, more kind of acted, kind of enabled performance?
Yeah, it was really. I mean, when I started out as a poet, you know, I knew that there was something in my voice and my body that was important in the tree. So rather than writing as written, I create performances where my body and my voice were part of that, the delivery. And so after my first show, which is called Whispers of the Mystical from the Dark Side of the Moon, create the Blood Tales, and then, you know, it was really obvious that there was more life and more wanted to come through than, you know, the spoken words. It was given really that my, I had to kind of find a bodied or properly expressive way to do justice to it, the energy and the essence of the Blood Tales.
Let's talk a little bit about yourself as well, because there is a Birmingham connection, isn't there? I believe you were sort of born and bred in Birmingham, as it were.
Yeah, I was born in Birmingham. We moved to Shropshire when I was 9. I haven't actually been in England that much in the last 15 years.
Now, some of the things that I've read that you've done, your portfolio, as it were, in terms of your training, you've got there's a word that comes through, and it's alchemy, and it's a great, great word, which I think was really about sort of turning base metals into gold, but, you know, trying to find something elusive out of a number of different parts, I guess. And you, I think, have trained in psychology and art and circus, but you've also, I think, done shamanic studies, which I'm intrigued by.
Yes, my training's been extensive and has included college of psychology, and very interested in the human nature and how humans work. And then that also, you know, led me into the circus, obviously. There's a good link there. And then, yeah, I mean, it's just been a development of feeling the calling to broadening my training and my skills and that I offer. So the shamanic connects, and then I've also been out in the States training with an institute out there for the last 5 years. Yeah, it keeps evolving.
Excellent. Now, excitingly, you have on the 8th of March, which is International Women's Day 2019, you're launching premiere, if you like, of the London, UK premiere of The Blood Tales. And you're doing that at the Chapel Playhouse, which I think is a fairly new venue, isn't it, in King's Cross in London?
Yes, exactly. It is a new venue. It's just started out in January. The Friday night it's the press night, and then we have a Q&A afterwards. And then on the Sunday night, we have a panel with Chris Knight from the Radical Anthropology Group, who's very into the menstruation movement. And then we also have Lena Chan, who's an artist who's also specializing in menstruation. And so we're going to be there. And Saturday night, we'll probably, if there's an interest from the audience, we'll definitely have a Q&A as well. So there's plenty of opportunity to come down and get info about it.
Just finally, just the challenge, if you like, of the performance in terms of how you ensure that you get some of the kind of key themes across, and where does it go next? Where can you take it next?
So I think one of the challenges is kind of getting the base layer taboo and disgust and shame that is intimately associated with women's menstrual blood. And I think, you know, part of the show and part of my passion is to challenge that. It's just like, well, why do we have this shame? Because all this disgust, all this too, because really it's the essence, you know, we can't birth babies if we don't have blood, you know. So, you know, that's really around keeping going with the challenges, you know.
Excellent. Well, it's a very provocative piece, I think, in a very positive way. It gets people thinking and talking, which I think for theatre is one of the key aims. I wish you well for the launch, which is coming up, as I said, on the 8th of March for International Women's Day. And until that, are there places that people can find out more about the work?
www.thebloodtales.com.
Excellent. Well, Kate, it's been great to talk to you, and thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, James. Also great to speak to you.
The Blood Tales is a Silver Moon Theatre Company production. For more information on future events and performances, go to www.thebloodtales.com. And finally, a celebration of contemporary plays by African women through a new collection of work from leading female playwrights. I caught up with co-author of the collection, Yvette Hutchison, at Coventry's Belgrade Theatre to consider the release and its links to International Women's Day and global theatre.
Okay, I'm with Yvette Hutchison, and we're here in the Belgrade Theatre in Coventry. And Yvette, you're the co-editor of a new collection of contemporary plays by African women. So I'm already intrigued. So tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, so I guess first of all, it's important to say I'm co-editor with Amy Jephtha, who's a South African playwright and film writer. And this collection of plays came out of the African Women Playwright Network that we set up in 2015, because what we found was that there are many women on the continent creating powerful, diverse work on wide topics that is very hard to access, because few of these plays are published and not many of them reach festivals. So we decided to find ways of bringing together these playwrights and seeing what work we could develop for publication, because you might be interested to know there is actually only one published collection of plays by African women that's out there at all.
And this is the second, which I think is the first such thing in about 10 years, is that right?
Yeah, the last one was published by Kathy Perkins in 2008, so it is 10 years.
And you mentioned the network, and I think that's an important part of what we're going to talk about. And within that network, I think you've got about 240 kind of poets and playwrights and creative folks, and I think that's across over 20, 21 countries
it
or something
is,
like that?
It is. So when we started, we realised that it's really hard, even as South Africans, to speak to each other, know who's doing what work. It's a huge country, and there's quite a big north-south. So what's happening in Johannesburg and what's happening in Cape Town, we often don't know. But beyond that, to other countries is even more difficult. So when we started reaching out and working out who's doing what and who are the playwrights in the various places, again, what turned out is it's really rich and there are many people, but how do you find them? How do you begin to speak to them? And unless you go to university, there's no real drama training or writing training available. So women were really interested in peer mentoring, in sharing work, in sharing opportunities and collaborations. So we created a virtual network through a mobile app that was funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council in England. For me, it was a huge learning curve because I didn't know much about apps at all. I was really helped by Everyone Mobile, which is a company that is South African and UK based. They helped us develop that app, but we also helped them develop aspects of their platform that were more dialogical, because their platform was really created to be message-based and we wanted to have a much more conversational basis so that I could ask research questions but artists could also speak to me and each other about what they were interested in. And that for me was a huge learning curve around how to create that kind of platform, what worked and what didn't work. And what was really interesting was that although the online platform facilitated knowing what was being happening, that actually we needed face-to-face meeting for people to trust each other and really collaborate. So the good old-fashioned meeting in a room is very important, we discovered. And so we, Amy and I, through the University of Warwick's financial support, set up a symposium, which was, again, the first on the continent, bringing 55 playwrights from 8 countries together. And it was extraordinary to see the work, the questions, but also for the women to realize that being in competition for a few resources wasn't as useful as collaborating and creating critical mass who could then lobby for space or for opportunities. And then through the online platform and now the Facebook site that we use, we're now getting producers coming to us saying, have you got these kind of plays? So Judith Dong, who's in one of our playwrights being published, she and another playwright, Thembelile Moyo, have both had plays program this year in Pennsylvania for Pulley and Button Theatre. They're being invited to festivals and inviting one another. Adong Judith has also won the Prince Claus Award for her writing. So their visibility has increased a lot. And their working together has increased as well. So we've really hit our targets of not only for us as researchers having conversations, but for them to be more visible and more connected with one another. And the plays is just one of those outcomes. And for me, the work that they're able to do with each other is as important, I think.
Let's talk a bit about the plays themselves, because they are contemporary plays, and I'm interested in sort of what that means. And what I'm trying to get to is, how are they different from perhaps some of the more traditional themes that we might have seen from African nations?
I think that the plays by women on the continent have always engaged with a tension between having to deal with post-colonialism and where the identity of a local nation sits in relation to the colonial. And women's issues have always been subsumed into those kind of bigger debates on race or national sovereignty. And often the issues around women are fairly beleaguered. But these plays, although they do deal with fairly heavy topics, there's a kind of playfulness and irony, a kind of funny comedy that tempers some of those debates, helping us to engage with the fact that history and memory are really important, that the past is not past and still impacts in huge ways on women and girls. So, for example, Thembelile Moyo's play, I Want to Fly, looks at a young girl in a rural community who wants to be a pilot, but and how her dreams are affected by patriarchal systems, where her father can sell her as a bride, but how her schooling and teachers can actually give her empowerment to make different choices. And I think that what really interests me about this collection is how that kind of very specific, very rural, local African experience can inflect for young people here that might find themselves for different reasons in socioeconomic situations that make a dream like being a pilot impossible. But the play suggests ways that people can live their dreams. And I'm really interested in that local, global conversation. Another one of the plays that's going to be performed at a launch event is Adong Judith's Silent Voices, which deals with child soldiers, which again might seem like something very far away. But in conversation with some of the youth at the Belgrade Theatre, they find the experiences in playgrounds not dissimilar, and the kind of choices they're asked to make every day. And I think theatre gives us forums to speak about these experiences, whether they're about being young and facing difficult peer pressure, or whether it's women having to think about their own complicity sometimes in abusive situations, in how they raise their sons, or how they are so ashamed of abuse that they don't speak up, or how mothers will overlook things because it's their son. So it's become much more complicated, and I think the plays ask us to speak about our own complicity in whatever situation we stand, you know, ethnically or culture, you know, on a gendered level. And I think that in that way these plays speak to things that are very specific but also universal.
Now, the timing of the launch fits well with International Women's Day, which is coming up on the 8th of March, I think it is. And a number of those things that you've just mentioned mix into that debate and that kind of dialogue about human rights and about gender politics. And I think that this collection helps explore and define some of those things, I think.
It does. And what I really have loved about working on this collection is the range of work. So we've got J.C. Nyala's play that actually looks at what it is, it's called Unsettled, and being white or black in Kenya, living in and out the country, and what does it mean to be Kenyan or British in Kenya. And I think people are moving around a lot and asking those questions about who are they now that they're moving. And it doesn't matter where you're moving from or to, we deal with those questions. Or Nikabi Ninja, which is one of my favorite plays in the collection, which is about an Egyptian girl facing abuse, but whether it's catcalling or whether it's more than that. But she deals with it through a comic hero, cartoon alter ego, who keeps giving her rather radical ways to move forward that make us laugh, but also, I think, help us understand what some of the consequences of those social experiences are. So, for example, how we become fearful of all men, but not all men are potentially abusers, and how we need to think differently about managing fear or our own situation, whether we're in Cairo or whether we're in a club in Coventry.
And it's a very rich collection of work, and it's kind of snapshots of a kind of, as we said, a kind of wider movement, I guess, a kind of network. How are we taking it forward? What sort of, where's it going from the book?
Well, the network has, my ideal as a researcher was that if I could establish the network and it could create its own energy and its own momentum to continue without me, and that I could leave the room without being noticed, would be my mark of success. And I think that's happened. That JC Nyala is our community manager, and she is also now doing some outreach work with some schools in London around writing and diversifying curriculum. But I think toward the end of this year, my project will be over, but I think the network will continue. So, for example, at the end of March in Cape Town, some of the women from the network are getting together and doing some peer mentoring around writing and new work. I think in Kenya and Uganda, there's similar work happening, that these women are now running this for themselves in their own contexts. And I think that that is, for me, a mark that this network has been constituted and will run on beyond the research. And for me, that's good research, where I get what I want, but the community itself gains something that is of use for them in their everyday lives.
So for folks listening to us now, where can they find out more about the plays and about the book?
Okay, so on the Methuen website, Bloomsbury site, there are links where one can buy the book. It's Contemporary Plays by African Women, and it's available as a download for PDF or Kindle book, as a paperback, or if you've got more money, a hardback. So it's available in a lots of different formats through the website.
So it's available in lots of different platforms, and we'll put links as well on our page, so people can find out a lot more about that. And I've got a final question to ask you, and it's really about how your place in this, really, you know. So you're I think a reader at the University of Warwick in theatre and performance studies, is that right?
I am, yes.
So obviously that kind of brought you near to this, but how did it come about? How did your involvement come about?
My area of research is theatre in the African context, particularly South Africa, although I've also written and researched around Kenya and Nigeria. My doctoral research was around the relationship between history, memory and theatre, and how we tell stories about ourselves as individual people, but also communities, and how memory works. But what happened is I started looking for what people are doing now. I got really tired of reading and teaching and hearing papers at conferences around plays of the 70s and 80s, which is when the Heinemann and Oxford were really publishing African theatre. And I couldn't find the work. So I started going out looking for individual people and realized that the resources, both time and financially, weren't there. So I had to come up with a plan B. And Amy, and I know Amy is a young playwright whose work is very powerful. And I spoke to her and said, what can we do, when she was here at the Royal Court developing some work? And she suggested the mobile application, which really scared me. But I realized that it was a way of overcoming time and space. And it moved me into a new area of my own experience, my own research. I'm also really interested in decolonizing methodologies of research. So how can we as researchers not go in with our predefined questions, take things from communities and build our careers? I really wanted to find a way of doing research that was reciprocal, so that I got something and so did my community. But they also set some research questions that I didn't predefine what I was looking at. So I already knew what I was interested in. And I found this format really changed my research because, for example, at the workshop, I'd go in with a question, but where they took it was often different than where I expected it to go. So it's really changed the way I'm researching material. And it's also, I'm finding that I'm learning as much as I'm perhaps putting into the community around my own knowledge or experience. And I think that there's a kind of co-creation of knowledge that is a way that I would like to see my work developing more in that area. So the network was really for me to find what was going on. I am in a position where I can negotiate with publishers like Methuen, so there's something I could facilitate. And of course, I think that the more that's out there, the more interested publishers are, creates critical mass. And this has indeed happened. The African Literature Association in America has asked us to speak about the project and the book. There's a lot of African-American women's writing available. So I think there's another field that might take an interest and open up again, looking at the continent and the creative work that's coming out of the continent.
Well, it's a great project, and it's been great to take time and talk to you. And Yvette, thanks very much.
Thank you so much, James.
Thank you.
Contemporary Plays by African Women is a collaboration between Belgrade Theatre Coventry, University of Warwick, and the African Women Playwrights Network. For more information and links, go to www.belgrade.co.uk, or you can search for the African Women Playwrights Network on Facebook. And now it's time to close the box. My thanks to Daniel Bailey, Ivan Oyek and the team at the Rep Birmingham, Kate Joyner at Silver Moon Theatre Company, Yvette Hutchison, Belgrade Theatre Coventry, the University of Warwick, M7PR and Mac Birmingham. The New Curiosities Box is written and presented by me, James Sandy, and is a King of the Buttons production for 107.5 Switch Radio.